This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, we are talking about tomatillos.
And this episode was suggested on Reddit by M. Gleazy, which I assume is you, right?
No. But I love this. It's two E's and two Z's.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that you said it because for some reason I inserted a C in there and I was going to make it McGleazy.
Oh, I think you're going to say MC Gleazy.
MC Gleazy. No, thank you, McGleazy. M. Gleazy.
What's that, McGleazy?
Anyway, thanks. Okay.
So why don't we begin with memory lane. Molly, where is your memory lane for these little green delights?
You know, I think that I was probably eating tomatillos in Mexican restaurants, Tex-Mex restaurants, long before I knew that I was eating tomatillos.
Oh, yeah. My memory lane, as sometimes happens to me, you know, we start the show, we set off down memory lane. It's like a secret little passage in the woods. And then I realized that I have more memory lane than I thought, like as we embark on that journey together.
It's like the road like constructs itself before your eyes.
It's like it's more about the journey than the destination.
That's right. Because I'm not sure what's at the end of memory lane. We've never gotten there.
I think you just die.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe, no. You like regress back like Benjamin Button style and be like, you're not born yet.
Okay.
That's at the end of memory lane. Okay. But before you get to that point, when I was a kid and my dad and I, AKA,
Damster?
Dotser.
On Dancer, on Prancer.
We don't talk about my dad a lot because he's not as much of like a food person as my
dad
mom. But he does like
show,
food.
Richard. D-O-S-R.
Which I think is also one of the reindeer. Right?
Okay, go on.
Okay. So Dotser and I, I'm loving this. When I was a kid, we went to a salsa tasting at a supermarket in like Beaverton, Oregon, like suburban Portland.
I have a question. Did you guys go specifically for that or did you happen to be there when there was a salsa tasting?
Oh, no, we went specifically for the salsa tasting. We heard salsa tasting and we got in the car immediately.
I love this. Okay.
And off down memory lane.
Okay, go ahead.
And so, yeah, this was at like a, you know, kind of upscale-ish supermarket in West Portland. You know, now that I think back on it, I think this may have been just a ploy to get people in the store to buy more salsa and other things.
Really?
I thought they did it purely for love of the game.
Wow, that's ingenious.
And our favorite one was a green salsa, which was definitely a tomatillo salsa with some green chilies and onions and probably some lime juice in there. And that may have been the first time that I became obsessed with a tomatillo product.
So you think at that time you understood that the green color here probably came from a tomatillo?
No, I think I just understood that now.
Oh, okay. Okay, just checking.
And then I don't remember when I started cooking with tomatillos, but I'm going to guess that it is around the same time that I first smelled the Tonnemaker Orchard's chili roaster at the Seattle Farmers Markets. They have one of those this, you know, it's like a cage, like a big wire cage with some gas jets blowing fire into it. And they rotate it and it smells good for like miles around.
What does this have to do with tomatillos?
So like you would be drawn to their stand by the chili roaster, but then they've also got like a bountiful display of tomatillos. And I was like, how do you cook those? And I assume that is probably where I first bought them.
And we should say, too, that Tonemaker not only like roasts chilies, but they grow, I think, more different types of chilies than any other grower I'm aware of at the Seattle
Farmers
Market.
It's probably a tight race between them and Alvarez Farm.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
But yes.
So what are these things? Because, like, how's it different from just an unripe tomato?
Okay, so
is this a dumb question?
It's not a dumb question. It's not just an unripe tomato, and we're going to make that abundantly clear. However, I didn't think I was going to like learn anything that like shattered my world while researching this episode, but I did, and it's botanical.
Whoa.
Okay.
Hold on. Shattered your world sounds bad. Like, have you been like, is this just a brief break in your crying?
It's just,
have you been crying ever since?
No, it, what's the opposite of like, it blew up my spot. No.
It blew my mind with awesomeness.
It blew my mind with awesomeness. Yeah.
Okay.
It's like that isn't there a song from like the Lego movie about how everything is awesome?
Don't know.
You haven't seen the Lego movie?
No.
I haven't either.
Okay. Okay.
Have you played any of those like Lego video games on your phone?
No.
Me neither. These are things I know exist. Have you assembled a large Lego set anytime recently?
Yeah, okay. I have.
Well, what was it? Castle? Like a horse facility of some kind?
It was a Harry Potter themed thing. It could have been the night bus. I mean, I wouldn't call that a large Lego thing, but it was
No,
a
it's been
Lego
a while
thing.
since I, like, you know, when ACOTS D was younger, we did some pretty large, like a haunted castle type of Lego thing. Mm-hmm. And like, that is a real job.
I don't understand the thrill of Legos because you
all right,
put them
we're putting you on blast.
You
Legos.
Put them together.
That's correct.
Which is kind of tedious. Mm-hmm. Kind of hurts your fingers sometimes.
Oh yes.
And then you've got this thing, but like, there's no kid in the world who likes to play with the built Lego thing.
I think there are.
They
some.
Either put it on the shelf mm-hmm. and enjoy it, or they take it all apart again and add the parts to their bin of Lego pieces
that never gets used.
That's right. So it's like basically it's all about the process. It's about the journey, not the destination.
It's about the journey, not the destination. And then, then as soon as they finish assembling the Lego thing that you probably paid $75 for, then they want the next one.
That's right.
Remember, okay, couple of things, more things about Legos, because this is our Lego episode. This is my fault. Have you seen the Lego Friends Pony Washing Station?
Yes.
Okay, that we got. Like, we are still buying Legos, let me be clear.
Yeah.
Have you ever done Nano Blocks?
No, but I saw them at Kinokuniya recently.
Yeah. So Nano Blocks are like little tiny Legos that hurt your fingers more.
Mm, okay.
So I recommend those as well.
Okay. Do you have to use tweezers for them?
Probably it would help.
Well, if you step on one, I guess you
If you step on one, you have to use tweezers to extract it.
Yes. That's right.
All right.
Okay.
A tomatillo is a small fruit. They are most often green, but they can be yellow or purple or kind of a mosaic of the three. It grows surrounded by a sticky, papery husk.
Mm.
And they are most common in Mexican cooking, but have become a beloved part of Caribbean cooking as well, and have been part of Mesoamerican cuisine for millennia.
Why is the husk sticky? I mean, it makes the fruit sticky, too. What do you think that's all about, botanically speaking?
It's got to be some sort of... Okay, so I am gonna guess, this is a guess, that probably the sticky stuff has some like anti-pest, like, you know, natural pesticidal properties of its own, and also just helps the husk stick to it because the husk is obviously protecting the fruit also.
Okay. Okay.
Like, what is it being protected from versus like what does the plant want to eat the fruit? I do not know.
Okay. We should ask the fruit.
We should ask the fruit, yeah. They're
or the plant.
They're in the Physalis genus, there seem to be two species, Physalis philadelphica and Physalis ixocarpa. But as far as I could tell, the species names seem to be used kind of interchangeably. And you can find lots of claims about, like, you know, if it's like this color, it's this species. And if it's this color, it's the other species. Or like this one is usually used raw and this one's usually used cooked. I think they're the same.
Okay. You heard it here.
Yeah. So here's the thing that blew my mind. Are you ready?
Yes.
So when you roast tomatillos, like over an open flame or in the oven, which I do often, they smell kind of like green chilies, more so than roasting tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that so tomatillos, tomatoes, and peppers are all in the Solanaceae family. Mm-hmm. They're all the same botanical family. Tomatillos are much more closely related to peppers than to tomatoes.
Interesting.
So they are sister taxa, the Physalis part of the tree and the mm-hmm. and the pepper, the capsicum part of the tree.
Wow. Okay, that's very interesting.
I mean, like the phylogenetic tree, not like an actual tree.
So they're more closely related to peppers than to tomatoes, to recap.
Yes, okay. That's correct.
Very have you
I'm going to mention another kid thing out of nowhere, but it's going to make sense in a minute, sort of. Have you ever played Minecraft?
No,
I haven't either.
You haven't?
No.
I'm very surprised.
Okay. But I heard on one of my favorite podcasts, Get Played, comedian Heather Ann Campbell described Minecraft as a game where you punch a tree until you get enough wood to build a bench, which tells me everything I need to know about Minecraft.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know anything about Minecraft, but that sounds very evocative.
Yeah, yeah. So the tomatillos, they're closely related to ground cherries, mm-hmm. Which are like a little fruit that looks kind of like a mini tomatillo. It's got a little husk. And other husked nightshades.
Oh, I'm not aware of other husked nightshades.
Well, there are some.
Okay, great.
And most of the world's tomatillos are grown in Mexico and Guatemala.
All right. Okay. And so are they called tomatillos in Mexican Spanish?
I'm not equipped to answer that question, but I have a friend who is.
Is it Mr. Etymology?
It sure is.
Okay. So he knows about like different languages and stuff too.
Yeah.
Mr. Multilinguistics.
Yes, Mr.
Milter.
Mr. Military Man. Okay. So these things go by a lot of names. And so the word tomatillo comes from the Nahuatl tomatl. And allegedly, according to Wikipedia, these are sometimes called husk tomatoes or Mexican ground cherries in English. But Mr. Etymology has never heard anyone say those things.
Okay.
And we'll get further into like what are they called in Mexico in just a minute. But some of the other words related to them that I've already said, ixocarpa, as in Physalis ixocarpa, means slimy fruit. Specifically refers to the tacky stuff between the husk and the fruit.
But that's the opposite of slimy.
Yeah, I guess it's more tacky than slimy. But I mean,
yeah.
Opposite is a strong word. I feel like marble is the opposite of slimy.
What?
Slimy, I think it was kind of like, you know, lukewarm and sticky and wet.
No, slimy is like... As slimy does. I guess it's sticky, but fine.
Right. Something doesn't have to be very sticky in order to be slimy. It's hard to describe slimy, isn't it? You know it when you stick your hand in it.
That's right. Boogers, slimy.
Boogers are slimy.
And they're slippery, but they're also a little bit sticky. I can concede that.
Wow, you can tell that you're the parent of a young child.
That's right. Yep. Okay, what about Physalis?
Okay, so Physalis was coined by Linnaeus and comes from the ancient Greek for bladder or wind instrument. And as far as I can tell, this must refer to the puffed up husk. Because, like, otherwise, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
Okay, so in Spanish, here are some of the names in circulation. Okay, so you ready? Tomate de cáscara. Which is a husk, which means tomato with a husk. Tomate de fresadilla.
Is that like strawberry?
Yeah, like a little strawberry tomato.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Tomate verde.
This checks out.
Farolito, little lantern.
Ah!
That lantern plant, I think that's the same family also.
Okay.
Mil tomate. Don't know what that means? Tomate in parts of Mexico where tomates are called jitomate.
Wait a minute. In parts of Mexico where tomatoes are called jitomate.
Yes. There we go. So tomatillos are called tomate. Did I say it wrong?
Well, you said whatever. It doesn't matter.
What, you know, there's no way to find out. We're not recording this.
No, absolutely not. So, okay. So you cook with these quite a bit.
Quite a bit. Yeah.
All right. So tell me what you make other than, the tomatillo salsa that we're going to talk about in a second.
Okay. So these are one of my favorite foods and have been for a long time. And like, aside from just being incredibly delicious, they are a strong flavor and texture. So like, you know, you put them in something when you want tomatillo taste and tomatillo texture. And we'll get to the texture in a minute. But so it's not like a subtle seasoning that you'll throw into something, but they are quite versatile and they are available in good quality year round, unlike their friend, the tomato.
Mm-hmm. And do you just tend to buy them in like your Western supermarket?
I do, except so in season, they grow locally from like mid to late summer into fall, and then I will prioritize getting the local ones from Tanamaker or Alvarez Farm.
Okay.
And then sometimes you get like the purple ones, which are really sweet. But generally, like any supermarket that, you know, even some that don't like serve like a Latin American customer base will have a good quantity of tomatillos. But like the Safeway chain around here, like tends to be good for Latin American ingredients. So like I will usually, when I'm going to make salsa, I will just put salsa stuff on the shopping list. And I know that what I mean is tomatillos, serrano chilies, and cilantro.
Okay. This sounds delicious. Go on.
Okay. So you got to start by removing those husks. Mm-hmm. You gotta peel off that husk in a sensual way.
And do you do it like under running water or do you do it when they're dry? What do you do?
No, it's easier if you get them wet.
Okay.
So I put my tomatillos in a bowl. I put that bowl in the sink and like run some water into it. And then I kind of just peel them under the still water.
Got it. Okay. Okay.
Do you find that still waters run deep?
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Whoa. Yeah.
Does that just mean like, is that just like a nice way of telling someone to shut up? Or is it like an observation about people who are quiet? Or both?
Both.
Okay. Mm. Where was I? Okay. So yeah. So then I'll like husk them in the bowl, dump out the water, and then like rinse them a couple more times until the water no longer is like soapy.
Mm-hmm.
Until
the IXO stuff is all icked off.
Yeah. I assume the IXO stuff has like saponifiers in it.
Ooh. Does it get bubbly?
It gets bubbly. Yeah.
Ooh.
A little bit.
Okay.
So then you can use them raw or cooked.
Okay. So you were going to talk about texture. How is the texture different from like a firm tomato, for instance?
So more pectin. So like, you know, tomatoes have a lot of pectin. That's what makes them kind of jellied inside and what like, you know, makes a tomato sauce thick. Tomatillos have more of that.
All right. Okay.
So like stuff made with especially cooked tomatillos, they work as a thickener.
And I noticed, I've sometimes noticed in like a salsa verde that it has a certain sheen to it.
Yes, it totally does.
And is that from the pectin?
And you mean Martin sheen, right?
We have to do this joke.
Every time you say the word sheen, either of us says the word sheen. You were thinking Charlie. Yeah,
I was thinking Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, so you open up a little tub of salsa from the supermarket and Charlie Sheen steps out.
That's right. Yep. It was really alarming the first time and now I just look forward
to it. Right. Yeah. You can become inured to almost anything.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always glad to see that it's Charlie and not Martin because I had a big crush on Charlie Sheen when I was a kid.
Oh, and I think that maybe like not a lot of people would say I was glad to see that it was Charlie Sheen, not Martin.
So, I know that Martin is like more presidential and less problematic. but the part of me that lives on memory lane.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Loves Charlie Sheen,
what?
At least like circa 1980 something.
Has Emilio Estevez ever jumped out of your?
No, he's only half.
Container.
He's only half tomatillo.
He's only half tomatillo. Okay,
isn't he half Sheen?
I thought he was all Sheen and just like decided to use the original family name rather than.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
we're definitely treading into. into territory.
Who can we call about this? We're supposed to call Ken Albala when we have a question about like culinary history, but we have to call someone else for like Sheen talk. Okay, Emilio Estevez. It's time for every. Okay, I need to switch from Japanese to English Wikipedia. He's the son of Martin Sheen and the older brother of Charlie Sheen. So yeah, he's all Sheen or all Estevez,
but he used Estevez to distance himself from the Sheens.
I don't know why. I would have to like read more than one sentence into the Wikipedia article, and I'm not going to do that. Okay. But you know, actors, they do a lot of things.
They do so many things. Hey, let's try talking about Tomatillos again.
Okay, Tomatillos do so many things. So they have a Sheen,
whichever one you want.
You can make a raw tomatillo salsa like by just chopping them up, and then they've got like a little bit of like a little tooth to them. I wouldn't say crunch exactly.
And how's the flavor different?
Much like brighter and sharper.
Okay.
When they're raw.
Okay.
Although they are still a very tart fruit even when like fully broiled and pureed.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is what I love about them.
Do you usually make a roasted or broiled tomatillo salsa then?
Always.
Okay.
I've occasionally had a craving for a raw tomatillo salsa in the summer when I've got like the local ones, but 99% of the time they're going right under the broiler. I'm going to put them on.
Broil them whole?
I broil them whole.
Okay.
It ends up being like possibly I'm just not preheating my broiler enough, or possibly like some water is boiling off the surface, but they tend to go like 7 minutes on one side and 3 minutes on the other side. And you don't have to be afraid to get them like blackened. They're going to be great.
Okay. And then do you peel off the black stuff?
Nope.
Oh,
goes right into the salsa.
Okay, great. Yeah. So you dump the whole thing into the blender.
The whole thing goes into the blender or the food processor along with roasted. So while the tomatillos are roasting in the oven, I've got some serrano chilies and garlic in a skillet, just toasting in a dry skillet.
And what form is the garlic?
I wonder how many times I've gone through this salsa recipe on this show.
No, no, it's okay. I don't remember it at all.
Yeah.
So
okay,
anyway, what do you do with the garlic? Is it in the husk?
It's in the husk. Wow, we've just met our second husk.
Wow, this has been a really big day for us.
I mean, you taught us about the human sac, but what of the human husk?
Go on.
I've got some garlic in the husk and a few serrano chilies in like a small cast iron skillet. Any skillet would be fine on the stove. Just like slowly roasting until they get a little color on them. And then I'm going to husk the garlic. I'm going to cut the ends off of the chilies. And then I'm going to whiz that all up in the food processor with the roasted tomatillos, some like a good teaspoon of salt, touch of sugar.
Mm.
And I think that's it. And then that's kind of the base for the salsa.
Okay.
And then that salsa base, you add water to thin it out, chopped onion, and cilantro.
Ah, so the onion is fresh and gets added later.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
okay.
After it's cooled a bit.
Okay. And you wrote here that because of the fresh cilantro, this is only good for about 2 days.
Yeah, so like the salsa base, which is all cooked stuff, could probably live in the fridge for a few days, but why? Because you're going to want to eat it before that. But once you get like raw onion and cilantro in it, it's only good for a couple of days, but then you can turn it into chilaquiles if you have any left over.
Mm, okay. And do you use this in other recipes? Like do you ever make like a chili verde or something like that? Or?
Yes, so the chili verde doesn't come from the salsa, but I will make a chili verde, like chili verde in the Instant Pot. Friend of the show, Kenji Lopez Alt, has a recipe for it, but you don't even really need a recipe. So we're throwing Kenji under the bus.
Wow. Okay.
But like his recipe is a great starting point. So you take.
God, this episode we have put two beloved American institutions on blast. Legos, wow.
Legos
and
Kenji Lopez Alt. And then we redeemed Charlie Sheen. Like we traded in Legos and Kenji Lopez Alt for Charlie Sheen.
And we met two husks.
And we met two husks so far. Like who knows how many more husks we will meet in our lives or the rest of this episode.
I can't wait to find out.
Me too.
Okay, so chili verde. But anyway, we don't need a recipe, but look up Kenji's.
Okay. But you throw some pork, some chili, some tomatillos, basically add some salt into the Instant Pot. You cook it for like half an hour, and then you take the pork out, you puree the rest, and basically that's it. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I you have made it for me. Yes. And yours is delicious.
Enchiladas. Like okay. Enchiladas verdes. Those are one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Like I usually make them with like chicken and whatever kind of cheese I have on hand. And like a quick like, you know, again, like I'll roast some tomatillos and puree them with like some garlic and onion.
So you wouldn't just use your roasted tomatillo salsa?
It's too strong to be used as like an enchilada sauce by itself. So the enchilada sauce needs to be a little less, a little thinner and less spicy.
Okay, that makes sense.
But like in a pinch, like if you thinned it out and used it as enchilada sauce, would it be bad? No.
Okay, so when I'm making chilaquiles, which you and I just ate for lunch.
Yes.
I usually use La Victoria brand, like jarred salsa verde.
We keep that on hand all the time.
And the first ingredient of that is, of course, tomatillos.
Would you say a jar is a kind of husk?
No.
I don't think so either.
Okay.
But it was worth a shot.
Okay. Anything that we should say about La Victoria? I mean, I think it's a delicious product.
I think it's a really good jarred salsa. Yeah, I always get like the medium, like chunky green salsa. Yep. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah. Very tasty. Anything else?
I can't think of a time that I used tomatillos without also using green chilies in there somewhere. Like, it just seems like they go together, like, perfectly. Some foods are just like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They go together like whichever.
Like cheese and macaroni.
Like cheese and macaroni, like Sheen and whichever other Sheen is getting along with at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had huevos divorciados?
I have.
Did you have them at Señor Moose, which is now called
The Moose?
The Moose?
Something like that. Or the Señor.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yes, delicious.
So huevos divorciados, it's like eggs, like fried eggs served with green sauce on one side and red sauce on the other side. And
Correct.
The green sauce will be made with tomatillos, mm-hmm. typically.
Mm-hmm.
And usually some nice beans on there. Mm. And it's so good.
So good. So good. What about pozole?
Oh,
are there green forms of pozole?
Yeah, pozole verde.
Okay.
So good.
Okay.
So like made with like a tomatillo base. There's going to be chilies in there, probably lots of cilantro, maybe other herbs also.
Okay.
I haven't made pozole in too
long. What?
So good.
What about things like chicken chili? Doesn't
yeah.
that sometimes use tomatillos?
Like a white chicken chili.
Like,
that's something I haven't made in a while, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, yes, definitely there are recipes for that with tomatillos.
I remember there was a period of time after school when I would go to, I don't even remember now what the bookstore was called or the cafe that was attached to it. This was in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
I would go to this cafe and I would get an iced mocha.
Of course.
And I would get a cup of their white chicken chili, and then I would get a poppy seed scone to go. And this was like my afternoon snack after school in high school.
Awesome.
So random.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was in a strip mall. I mean, as most things were in my childhood. Yeah.
Have you been to, this is just mocha related.
Bollinger's. Bollinger's Books or something.
Bollinger's Books. Okay.
Yeah. Is, something
think it's still
like
there?
That. Probably not. No.
It turned into Bollinger's Bowling Alley.
Yeah.
Have you been to, this is mocha related. It's not tomatillo related. Have you been to Hello M Coffee House in the International District?
No.
It's so great. First, Watzel and Akots D went, and then they told me, you've got to check this place out. And then I went with Watzel the other morning. We walked down to the ID. It is like a little Vietnamese coffee house. It's just a wonderful space with like, you know, like sort of community, like history of the community, like in a timeline on the wall that I couldn't stop reading. But the coffee drinks are so good and so inventive. So it's everything from like, you know, like a classic Vietnamese iced coffee.
Oh, there was like a layer of like whipped egg or
yes.
something on top of a coffee drink that's the one that December got that they loved.
I tried the Viet Mocha, which is a mocha made with condensed milk and Milo malted milk powder.
Oh,
it was so
wow.
good. So smooth.
Okay. And so this is a coffee shop?
It's a coffee shop called Hello M in Seattle. Highly recommend it.
Okay. I want to come meet you there.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. We have some spilled mail.
We sure do. This spilled mail is from listener Ken.
And we're going to give his phone number here on the air. Just kidding.
Listener Ken Albala says, of course you should just call me, followed by his phone number.
Yeah.
And this is a response to our spaghetti episode.
So, listener Ken Albala, we will keep your phone number to ourselves. He says, spaghetti is complete nonsense. There's so much more to say. Durum semolina is from the Middle East, not Northern Europe at all. Macaroni was the generic name for pasta in Italy from the Middle Ages until the 19th century. But most importantly, you can extrude pasta without a complex machine. There's a video of me doing it on YouTube with a torchio ad bigolare. What?
It's some sort of pasta extrusion device.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you, Ken Albala. Wow, I want to watch this video on YouTube.
So apparently we everything we said on the spaghetti episode was wrong, but I bet it was a pretty fun episode anyway. Remember how we kept saying, like, in our subscriber newsletter, like our running joke was that we've never done a spaghetti episode
now
and never will?
It.
Well, now we know why we shouldn't have done it.
Yeah. Okay.
No, it's fine.
Matthew, what you snacking?
Hey, what you snacking?
De-de-de.
You gotta tell me what you snacking.
Boop-be-doop-be-doop.
Or I'll release the Kraken. So what you snacking?
What you snacking?
I'm snacking a new flavor of turtle chips, the chips that we basically did a whole episode on, but I still can't stop talking about them. This is Fuego flavor, and it's basically like they're Flamin' Lime, but not as sweet and a little bit spicier. Very tasty.
Okay. You know, Matthew, I've been snacking on corn muffins, the recipe we talked about in the corn muffins episode.
From Cooks Illustrated?
Yeah. Did we link to that in
I
the
think
show
we did,
notes?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, anyway, we were having some friends over, I think maybe like a total of 8 or 10 people. And so I made a double batch of corn muffins. Okay.
Baby.
So like 24
muffins.
24 muffins. And I knew that we were going to have leftovers, but it turned out that these people like didn't eat very much. Or like maybe had a max of one muffin each. So Matthew, we have been steadily working our way through like a whole extra dozen corn muffins. And I had the last one, I think, over the weekend.
Do you pop them in the oven for a few minutes?
Yeah. So I just, once they're cool, I freeze them in like a gallon size Ziploc freezer bag.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Then I've even, you know, the texture is not the greatest, but I've even taken them straight out of the freezer and just popped it like on a paper towel on the defrost setting in the microwave till it softens up a bit, then put it in the toaster for a minute. Love them so much. It's such a good recipe.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you got onto the muffin train.
I'm on the muffin train. Yep.
Do you know what the first step in making corn muffins is? You have to remove the husk.
Oh, I was thinking.
It's the third husk.
Yes, the third husk. Wow. We did it. We attained the third husk level.
The third husk.
We've unlocked the third husk.
I was gonna try and make a joke about the movie The Third Man, but I don't remember anything about that movie, although I haven't seen it. And like, no one wants a joke about an old movie anyway.
Matthew, I hear you have a now but wow, which people
sure
do want.
This is a crossover now but wow slash beak of the week.
Okay.
Okay. Because it is an article from The New Yorker, a magazine that maybe you've heard of.
Huh.
Did you read this article?
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't even heard of it.
So it's by Meera Subramanian, and it's in the January 31st issue, and it is called Consider the Vulture. And I'm gonna read a couple of bits from the article, which is, so it's an article about efforts to conserve like critically endangered vulture species in Nepal and India.
Okay.
But it is also a piece just kind of in the John McPhee New Yorker tradition of like, I'm a great writer. I'm very curious about vultures. I'm going to share with you in a very entertaining format, like all of the things I find interesting about vultures that I learned along the way.
Oh, fantastic.
Vultures are completely awesome birds, and if you don't already think so, you will after reading this article. So
okay.
Here's a couple of clips. Quote, a group of feeding vultures, which is known as a wake, can transform a hulking carcass into a bare skeleton in the time it takes a human to fix a pot of rice.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I just have to say, a group of feeding vultures is known as a wake?
Apparently.
God, that's so good. Okay.
She also writes, the vultures were so gross that they were gorgeous. It's easy to shun vultures as dirty and disgusting or as harbingers of death, but they are more like undertakers, performing an essential job and receiving little thanks for their work.
Oh, thank you, vultures.
Yeah. yeah, I think you'll enjoy this article. It's also sad that all of these vulture species have become endangered, but we're trying to fix that.
Okay.
But cool birds, great article. The New Yorker. It's a magazine.
Okay. Hey, our producer is Abby Circatella.
Yes. And you can rate and review us. We'll plug our show. This mm-hmm. is our show, and you can plug us into the internet and we'll light up. And you can also rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
You can chat with other listeners. You can get plugged into the conversation.
Wow.
With other Spilled Milk listeners at everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com.
And until next time, we're emerging from our husks to greet a new day.
That's me stretching and coming out of my husk.
I feel like it would sound more crackly if you actually had a husk. Does a husk have to be dry? Is that like an inherent part of a husk?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Molly Weisenberg.
What would a wet husk be?
Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amsterberg. We don't need to plug today.
No, I don't want to plug anything.
Yeah.